Actually, Your Honor, I'm going to go first. We had saved my name is Sadia Sadiq, and I also represent the petitioner. May it please the court, my name is, again, Sadia Sadiq, and I represent the petitioner, Mr. Rafael Labujewski. Your Honor, this case also is an issue dealing with reinstatement, and we are our position is that to hold that the reinstatement statute applies to Mr. Labujewski would be to deny him a right that he had acquired prior to the effective date of that statute, which was April 1st, 1997. Mr. Labujewski was ordered deported in 1990 by an immigration judge because he was an overstay. He left the United States pursuant to that order and then re-entered the United States sometime in 1992 or 1993 without permission. However, his then lawful permanent resident mother filed a visa petition in his behalf in November 1994. That petition was then approved by the then Immigration and Naturalization Service in 1995. The reinstatement statute at question here, Section 241A5 of the Immigration and Nationality Act, went into effect not until April 1, 1997. So at the time that Mr. Labujewski had re-entered the United States, that he had an approved visa petition and he had a settled expectation that he could file for adjustment of status. That expectation was destroyed then in 2003 when the Attorney General deemed that he could not be afforded the opportunity to continue to pursue that adjustment of status application because of the reinstatement provision. That's correct, Your Honor. He had not filed at that time because he wasn't eligible immediately when he did initially receive his approved visa petition. And the fact that he could not file his visa, his actual adjustment of status application until after April 1st, 1997 when the reinstatement provision went into effect does not mean that he does not have a settled expectation to still pursue that adjustment application. He filed sometime in 2001, Your Honor. And again, he filed when the provisions at 245I were enacted by Congress. Now, when 245I was enacted, which was after the reinstatement provision, it was enacted to benefit aliens such as Mr. Labujewski. That provision allowed those aliens unlawfully present in the United States who had previously filed a visa petition prior to April 1st, 1996, to adjust their status under Section 245I of the law, 2001. And he was then able to then file his application, and he did immediately file upon paying a $1,000 penalty. Now, again, 245I allows people such as Mr. Labujewski, and it addresses their past conduct. So the fact that he had waited to file his adjustment application was not because he did not want to act upon it or did not want to pursue it. It was because under the law at that time, he could not file the application because his priority date was not current yet. And secondly, there was no provision yet at that time permitting him the opportunity to go forward with his adjustment application owing to his unlawful presence in the United States. Now, in addition, even though he is unlawfully present in the United States and he did re-enter within that five-year period that he was required to stay out, Congress has put into place waivers such as the I-212 waiver, which allows people such as him the opportunity to file for re-entry for permission to reapply to re-enter prior to that five-year period. So, despite the fact that he did not stay out for 5 years, there are still waivers into effect which were not destroyed or diminished by the enactment of Section 241A5. Again, Your Honor, those waiver applications would be filed concurrently with his adjustment of status application. And when he filed his 485 application, he at that time could have requested that he also be permitted to file an I-212 waiver. There's no requirement that you file the waiver procedurally at the time you file a visa petition.
All of this sounds like a lot of sort of what ifs and maybes and
things develop in a certain way in the future. And I am having a difficult time wrapping my mind around a set of expectations in such a situation of uncertainty.
Well, Your Honor, the one fact which is certain, which we would argue is the pivotal fact, is that he had filed a visa petition and that that was approved by the... It gives him the opportunity, Your Honor, to pursue an adjustment of status application.
And doesn't legitimize or legalize his illegal reentry.
Ultimately, Your Honor, it is to the discretion of the Attorney General, or if he were placed in front of an immigration judge, as to whether he would actually be approved for adjustment of status.
Anybody have a vested right in the sense of a land grab test in something that is suspected?
Your Honor, we would argue that it's not inherently speculative because people file visa petitions all the time and follow the procedures which are laid out by Congress in order to ultimately file for adjustment of status. The fact that temporally that occurred after the enactment of Section 241A5 would not affect his ultimate right to be afforded lawful permanent residence. Your Honor, if there are no other questions, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for my colleague.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Pat Pusandu on behalf of the Attorney General. Your Honor, this case does present an independent ground, different from the last case, that the Court can decide this case without getting into retroactivity issues because, indeed, if we look in the record, the service did base the decision of the denial of adjustment of status on the fact that the petitioner didn't stay out of the country for 5 years. So they have to get around that problem. Now, what I understand the argument is from the petitioner's point of view on that point is that there were these waivers that you could apply for. The problem is that they didn't apply for that waiver, the I-212 waiver, with their adjustment application. They're exactly right. Usually what happens is the individual applies for one of these waivers with the adjustment application. And there's a reason they didn't apply for that waiver, because there's a whole lot of fraud going on here. The application for adjustment of status at that time, first of all, there's fraud in entering the country, using someone else's documents. There's also fraud, if you look in the record, we've pointed out in our briefs, the adjustment application at page 8, they represent that they never were deported. So it would be contradictory for them to file an I-212 application indicating, yeah, they were deported and they didn't remain out of the country for 5 years. So that's, we would say that the case is dispositive on that point, that the service was exactly within its discretion to deny the adjustment application based on the fact that they didn't have that they didn't stay out of the country for 5 years and there was no evidence of any waiver that was filed or any attempts made to correct that. We would point the court to the statute that was in effect at the time that they were deported and that they illegally entered the country, 8 U.S.C. 1182A6B. That's the 1994 statute that said you've got to remain out of the country for 5 years. So there's no issue there about whether or not, whether you applied today's law or the law at the time that they legally entered. It says you've got to remain in the country for 5 years. I think that that is dispositive of this case. But in case it's not, Your Honors, we would, on the Landgraf retroactivity analysis, let me just say a few words about that. As my colleague stated in the earlier argument, the government takes the position that the court should adopt the majority of courts holding on the first prong of Landgraf. That is, it's pretty clear. Especially when those two circuits that have gone the other way, one of those two circuits, the Sixth Circuit, the Ninth Circuit, its decision came down before St. Cyr. And if you look at the legal landscape, the several courts that have found that there's no clear intent one way or the other have cited to the St. Cyr analysis on that point, that there's no clear congressional intent. So we would ask the court to find no clear congressional intent one way or the other if it reaches that question. And then finally, on the question of impermissible retroactivity, we think it's far too speculative for a mere visa petition the filing of a mere visa petition, even the approval. There was actually an approval in this case in 1995 of the visa petition. We don't think that that establishes a vested interest, a substantive right, or anything akin to that for purposes of the Landgraf test that would be sufficient. And I think this case emphasizes that point, because as even petitioners point out, at the time that they filed the visa petition and it was approved, the one notable fact here is that the petition wasn't current, and it wasn't anywhere near being current. And what I mean by that is approval of a visa petition doesn't even get you a visa. You have to, in this case, the adjustment attempt was made on the basis of a LPR, lawful permanent resident parent. And the ordinary course, the ordinary procedure is to apply for that outside the country, and it usually takes quite a bit of time. In this case, that petition didn't come current until 2001, and that's why they waited. So you're talking about 6 or 7 years from the time that they filed a visa petition. Okay, so then you're looking at when the visa becomes current, and then they file their adjustment application, and then it's within the discretion of the Attorney General to grant or deny that application. Yes, Your Honor, I think it's as applied, but I think it, the way that the Supreme Court handled it in St. Cyr, I mean, I think it was as applied there because it looked to see whether or not there was a guilty plea that was entered. But you're looking at a class of aliens, I guess. Maybe it's not very specific, but I think it is specific in some sense. Of
the reliance of this particular...
Exactly. That's true, although I think the reliance has to be reasonable. I do think there is some inquiry there, because this court has held in another context, I think, which opposing counsel, or maybe it was the last argument mentioned, when you're talking about the 212C cases of someone who's claiming that they they relied on the expectation of 212C relief when they committed their crime. And I think that there would be an inquiry whether that's reasonable. In most courts, I think all courts have found that not to be reasonable. Well, it's interesting you say that, because I don't think there's any reliance here, and I don't think they're making an argument based on reliance. Reliance, there's several ways that you can get to impermissible retroactivity under Landgraf, and reliance, I guess, would be one way. The clearest evidence of reliance we can see is like the St. Cyr reliance. Here, the only, I'm talking about another context, the St. Cyr decision, that gives us an example of a clear instance of detrimental reliance. I think here, the only claim that they could try to make for reliance is when they illegally enter the country, and I think they're not even trying to make that argument. The argument they're really making is not based on reliance, it's based sort of on a settled expectation, a vested interest that attaches or substantive right. Well, I guess, although, you know, there's a question, is that really, because if it's reliance, I don't see how they relied. No, I don't think that's exactly the point we're making. Yeah, and the fact that there was a statute that Congress had passed saying if you enter illegally, you may be able to adjust your status. That's not saying anything about illegal reentries. First of all, this person illegally reentered, so that's not saying anything about someone who's previously been deported. So there is another statute on the books that says if you've previously been deported and illegally reentered the country, you're inadmissible. And if you're inadmissible, you're ineligible for adjustment of status. And that's what's happened here. So it's kind of hard to make the argument citing the one statute where another statute clearly indicates that you're ineligible. And then, of course, you have the reinstatement statute that clearly put them on notice as of 1996, September of 1996, went into effect April 1, 1997. But I think that the question really is there any settled expectation, well-settled expectation? Expectations themselves, even the Supreme Court in Landgraf said, mere expectations aren't sufficient. They can have an expectation of somewhere down the road that they're going to be able to legalize their status if everything works out correctly. But I think that the Supreme Court in Landgraf was speaking in terms of a well-settled expectation. So the way that we've kind of indicated this in our briefs is that, you know, every law, this is what I think Landgraf in a footnote, I believe in its decision, said every law has some effect. Every law in some way is going to upset expectations, but that's not the test that the Landgraf court set out. So we would ask the court to affirm the reinstatement order in this case.
Thank you. I am Ms. Reyes, and may it please the court and counsel, I am here to represent Mr. Labojewski on rebuttal. There seem to be two outstanding issues, both from the last case and from what has been argued so far, and so the two issues I would like to speak to are the independent grounds on which the government says this case is distinguishable and whether there's a settled expectation here. First of all, the independent ground the government represents is the denial based on inadmissibility. Well, the reason that the denial is inaccurate and that the government made a mistake in its reasoning was because there is, in fact, a waiver available. And as Ms. Siddiq pointed out, it was not required to have been filed before he stepped into that interview on the day that he was given his interview on his 485, which is an application for adjustment of status. And practically speaking, he would have been given the opportunity to have filed after the interview. All that the Immigration Service would have had to have done was issued a request for evidence at the time of the interview, asking him to have supplied them with a 212 waiver that would have waived his admissibility. That means that Congress had already decided that there are sometimes circumstances on which the fact that you had entered illegally in the past, meaning that you had come in within that five-year window in this case, is waivable and you can, in fact, adjust your status. It is within the discretion of the Immigration Service to grant you adjustment of status if they, in fact, grant you a 212 waiver, which makes your inadmissibility problem disappear. Any other fraud that was involved regarding his entry using false documents, also there is a waiver for that. It is called the 601 waiver, and it would also have been within the discretion of the Immigration Service to have granted him that waiver, both of which would have cleared him for adjustment of status, neither of which barred him on their face from becoming a legal permanent resident in this country at the time that he appeared for his interview. In terms of whether the expectation vested, whether there was an expectation at all, and whether that expectation was too speculative, every court to have ruled on this issue agrees that the expectation of the possible of a possibility adjusting your status could fall within the Landgraf analysis and qualify based on the language in Landgraf when the Supreme Court said that even the possibility of discretionary relief from deportation, or as it's now called, removal, qualifies as a viable expectation under its analysis regarding the permissibility or the impermissibility of applying a statute retroactively. The fact that he filed that he was eligible for the grant of the visa petition that was filed on his behalf by his mother means that his expectation for adjustment of status wasn't speculative. If he had no relation to a qualifying relative who could have filed a visa application, or he hoped at some point to be married to a United States citizen, or he hoped at some point to find an employer who would file a labor certification on his behalf, that, Your Honor, is correct, is incredibly speculative. But he was one of the fortunate individuals that fell into a category that is protected by and recognized by Congress in an I-130 visa application, which would have and ultimately did make him eligible for adjustment of status. To be eligible for adjustment of status, the threshold question is there a visa available to him? To be eligible for that visa availability, he had to have had a qualifying relative such as his mother. That is what takes him without the group of people who are just speculatively hoping to someday adjust their status, his expectation for that vested the minute that his United States, well, at the time she was a legal permanent resident mother, filed his I-130. The I-130 was then approved so that the government actually recognized him as one of those special immigrants who actually could be protected and is protected and possibly eligible for adjustment of status, and that takes it without the fear that his expectation was, in fact, speculative. I believe that my time has expired. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks to all counsel. This case will be taken under advisement as well. We have completed the call of the morning, and therefore the court will rise until about 9:30 tomorrow.